broadcasting live from somewhere in the desert, posting up truth like a stamp in the corner of a letter. It's Leander Grace, that loud. Amid lies, we seek truth. Amid truth, we awaken. And once awakened, we speak truth everywhere. Now we're opening night and powering to reveal what's been hidden in plain sight. It's time for Leander Grace Out Loud, because your silence will not protect you. Oh, no, it will not. Your silence will not protect you, but we're here to talk about things, and we're going to talk about them loud. Good evening out there to la-di-da-di and every other body, and a hearty hello to all of you light workers, you seed sowers, you truth tellers, you avatars, and of course our listening spirit and space force rangers. We want to shout out to all you scholars as well. The diggers and the memers, the work of whom is not for sissies. We welcome you here to Empathic Channel. We also have an extended broadcast this evening. We'll talk about that just as we said that we would. It is Monday, April 22nd, 2024, and we're broadcasting live from the high mountain desert. Our goal today, as it has become our habit, is to help folks with an empowering assist on the road to owning your own experience. I am your host and Empathic Channel, Leander Grace, and it is so good to be with you here this evening. This is the very first night of our extended broadcast time. Remember last week, we reminded you, again, last night, we reminded you that we'd be doing this, that we'd be going to two-hour broadcasts throughout the week. And I think we're going to be calling it All Holistic Truth and just have the Empathic Channel sections and stuff. I don't know. We're going to see. We've got the rest of this week, this whole Feast of Unleavened Bread to go to work out all the kinks. And so we'll use this first week to work out the kinks. And we've got some kinks in tonight's broadcast. I didn't get the graphics up on the Blog Talk Radio page, but that's okay. We will get them up. And the we is inclusive, of course. But we have a lot to talk about this evening. We're going to drop this into two parts, draw it up. At the first part, we're going to talk about Nisan 14, right? We're going through the Passover. We're going through the times of the Passover and walking through those footsteps and that timeline and taking a look at it, because also during this time of Passover is when Yeshua HaMashiach Nagid was crucified to the cross. And so we're going through this and we're not taking a look at it with the bony finger shaking. We've already covered that last night as we go through it historically and take a look at things as they are and do a compare and contrast, and using today's picture perhaps to learn us a little bit about, we can teach us, but it's rather to learn us a little bit about the whole picture and how it is that our sister Judah and Ephraim, the northern kingdom, the lost sheep, the ones who Jesus came for, how the timelines became skewed. We talked about that. We're going to show how the point at which they became skewed is a possibility as we look at it tonight. This evening, Nisan 14, at about the ninth hour, which was 3 p.m., that explains my little bit of confusion last night, at about the ninth hour, at 3 p.m., Yeshua HaMashiach Nagin was pronounced dead, and the spear was thrust in his side, and out came both blood and water, and he was removed from the cross, and he was wrapped in linen, and Joseph of Arimathea had secured the body of Jesus so that he could do this and then place him in his brand new tomb so that the scriptures in Isaiah might be fulfilled. Now, every year at Easter or at different times, you know, the Northern Kingdom, the Christians, the Catholics, the Evangelicals, or otherwise denominationals, get together and we go over these stories. But in this week, We're going to talk about them together, zusammen. That's a German word. It means together. We're going to go through this together. We're going to put the two timelines together and talk about it, because we also have errors of due process in the pseudo trials of Jesus. We're going to talk a little bit about that trial. We have a pseudo due process working out on the world stage with our favorite president, Donald J. Trump. We're going to draw the parallels. We're not doing it lightly. There is no tongue in cheek. We need to learn from this. And then we'll also take a look at some of the things that are going out on the world stage. That'll be in the first hour. Then in hour two at 8 o'clock, when people are expecting Empathic Channel to be airing, then we will go ahead and open up the phone lines and start some of the Empathic Channel teaching thingies. But until that time, this first hour, we're going to go ahead and take it up, take up this whole issue of the cross and of Jesus. And that's what we're going to do. And we're going to have a very good time doing it. We'll make it a large time as we do continue to hold a space of peace, love, and grace as this great awakening continues to accelerate across the face of the earth. And during tonight's broadcast, if we reflect thoughtfully rather than emotionally, we might be able to see the parallels and see the lessons of today that can teach us how better to view the historical fact pattern, as it were, during the time of Jesus' trial and crucifixion. Today's trial on the world stage, the same as the trial that Jesus went through, but not quite. I want to take a little bit of time. We've got a whole hour to go through this, so I want to take a little bit of time and visit Sodom and Gomorrah, one of my very favorite places to visit in the book of Joshua. Understand that there's not a lot of allusion given to Sodom and Gomorrah in the book of Genesis, except where they got zapped to toast. And the verbiage and the words that are used for very specific reasons, but not for our necessarily contemporaneous understanding, are used for a reason. But when we read the book of Joshua, we find out more information about what was going on, exactly what was going on, the type of people and the type of lawfare, oh my, she used it, that was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. And so for that, we'll need to take a look at the book of Joshua. And when we turn to the book of Joshua here in a minute, it'll be Joshua chapter 19, and it'll be verse 13 is where we're going to start, somewhere around there. And then during Empathic Channel, we're going to talk about some stressors and anger management and how to shed the stress and, you know, managing the anger, not how to avoid it, because trying to avoid anger is like trying to avoid breathing. Eventually you turn blue and something blows up. That's just the way that is. So we'll also talk about Earth Day and things of that nature. See what I did there? Yeah, Earth Day and things of that nature. But the first part of the hour, the first part of the program, I want to talk about Nisan 14. That is the date today. Nisan 13 was yesterday, and that was drawing attention to the arrest and the jailing of Jesus and the things that led up to that. And then tonight, we're going to pick up as if it were morning, and then come to the ninth hour, which would be about 3 p.m., the time that is recorded in the scriptures. The best that we can tell is that the hour that Jesus died on the cross. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. We're also going to talk about Passover, as the Passover we certainly are. We got some jamming tunes to play, and because during a three-hour broadcast you only have time for, well, I've got time for all the music that I set aside, so we might just be able to be jamming and slamming and having a good time. So we're going to talk about all of those things in this first hour, and we're going to start, I made up a little chart for me to go by, but we're going to start by taking a look at the chart I made, if I can find it. There we go. See, I can go, oops. Now, I want to talk about, first of all, the Northern Kingdom a little bit, because what we're going to end up doing is syncing this up. Now, we know as Christians and those who celebrate Easter, as it were, that we have a Good Friday where Jesus was crucified, and then we have Resurrection Sunday, and we know that the numbers don't add up no matter how many times we pretzelate our brain to get the dates in, and it's because we're using the wrong calendar. You know, and we said that last night. God has a calendar. He has us using it for a reason. There are things that occur on his timeline, whether we're prepared or whether we're knowledgeable about it or not. And if we're not understanding and using the correct calendar, then things like Easter can come in and some wayward teachings can come in, and then people look at us like we got a screw loose when we try to tell them that Jesus was crucified on Friday and then he rose on Sunday, because that's not what happened. What is what happened is that he was crucified on Nisan 15, which would have been sundown of the 14th, and then he rose again on the morning of the 18th. And it just so happens that when Nisan 13 lands on a Tuesday and a Nisan 14 lands on a Wednesday, then Nisan 15 and 16, which are Sabbath days according to the Hebrew calendar of Passover and days of unleavened bread, those 2 days are Sabbaths, and those and also the first day of unleavened bread is a holy assembly. So we have Passover, then we have the first day of unleavened bread, and then what happens with the Thursday and a Friday follows with the Sabbath. So there are 3 days where Mary and the girls were not going to be able to bring spices. You see, they wanted to bring spices and dress the corpse, but by law, and everybody had the law right up square their bucket, just like we have it right square up our buckets right now. And so they durst not, we've got to use that word from time to time, durst is a good word, they dare not go out and do this work of dressing the body and becoming unclean. And so they had to wait till Sunday morning, and that was the third day, that's Nisan 18, that was the third day, or after the third day, the morning of the feast of the third day of unleavened bread. And that was the resurrection day. And it happened to be on a Sunday, the first day of the week, according to the scriptures. But when we as the northern kingdom got sold on Easter rather than Passover, because during the early church they celebrated Passover. How do you know? Paul talks about it. That's where the word Easter came in. That's the Passover that Paul was talking about. And so in that, it psychologically and then habitually and communally and then actively became a different date. And I am going to bring up a little bit of the hardship that's between the evangelical Christian Protestant denominational people and the Catholics, is that the papacy in the 4th century sought to change the times and laws and took the worship day from Saturday to Sunday. And they justified it through every other first day of the week, and it's the Lord Day, and it's the 8th day, and it's the yada, 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 and none of it works if you're intellectually honest. And then Easter took over Passover because they wanted a delineation. There was a cootie game going on back then, too. Revelation 4 tells us, here are the patience of the saints. Here are those that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Yeshua. And those centuries of papacy rule, of papal rule, they wanted nothing to do with Sabbath worship and wanted nothing to do with Passover. And took over, otherwise blended together and made it one great big happy pagan party. And now we got bunnies and eggs. And it's our choice whether we want to go forward with bunnies and eggs or whether we want to begin to observe the Passover Northern Kingdom, lost sheep, Ephraim. In Ezekiel it says we're going to be one stick. God's going to have his way whether we like it or not. So we might as well get on board to see why it is God says it's going to be this way and become willing to be participants in the completion of his plan. And that means putting down our biases against our sister Judah and embracing our sister Judah as she is, where she is, and stop trying to run the root. And the root can learn a few things from the wild branches. We know this. It's that separation thing that won't be happening for much longer. We'll be coming together just like the scriptures promised. Just like the scriptures promised. So here we are on Nisan 14. And Jesus went through several trials. And it was like, here, you try him. No, I'm not going to try him. You try him. I know. Let's send him over here. He'll try him. He'll crucify him. He hates everything. And yet here it is. Pontius Pilate says, I can't find anything wrong with this man. I don't find any sin in him. What if we give you Maiorcus, pardon me, what if we give you Barabbas instead? I just thought I'd slip that in there for effect. So they wanted Barabbas freed and they wanted to crucify Jesus, and he went through all of the things that he went through, and we know what happened on the Via Dolorosa. And then they nailed him to a cross, and he died early, and they entombed him before sundown, according to Isaiah. So let's take a look at some of these scriptures and see what it is that, and today was a little bit of a rough day today because I contemplated the cross today and did all of the rest, and I found an unusual mood arriving within me, and I let it sit for a little while, then it started to itch, so I took it off. But it's amazing, as I've been going through this and trying to graph out a way, I mean, conceptually in my mind, I kind of got it, but to map out a way to present it, especially on air versus audiovisual, so that it's understood, is a bit of a challenge, but, you know, that's what we do. So I'm going to take a look at Isaiah 53. That is the regular verse, right? In Isaiah 53, we've got, who hath believed our report? And to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed? For he shall grow up before him as a tender plant and as a root out of a dry ground. He hath no form nor comeliness. And when we shall see him, there's no beauty that we should desire him. Despised and rejected of men, a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief. And we hid, as it were, our faces from him. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. Yet we did not esteem him stricken, yet we did esteem him stricken and smitten of God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, and he was bruised for our iniquities, and the chastisement of peace was upon him, and with his stripes we're healed. All we, like sheep, have gone astray, and we have turned every one to his own way. And the Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. He was oppressed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He's brought as a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is dumb, so he opened not his mouth. He was taken from prison and from judgment. And who shall declare this generation? For he was cut off out of the land of the living. For the transgression of my people was he stricken. And he made his grave with the wicked and the rich in his death, because he had done no violence, neither was any deceit in his mouth. Yet it pleased the Lord to bruise him. He hath put him to grief. When thou shalt make his soul an offering for sin, he shall see his seed, and he shall prolong his days. and the pleasure of the Lord shall prosper in his hand. He shall see of the travail of his soul and shall be satisfied. By his knowledge shall my righteous servant justify many, for he shall bear their iniquities. Therefore will I divide him a portion with the great, and he shall divide the spoil with the strong, because he hath poured out his soul unto death, and he was numbered with the transgressors, and he bare the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors. So that is Isaiah 53 that we apply to Yeshua HaMashiach and the walk that he did. There was no deceit in his mouth. There was no oppressive word toward the sick, toward the poor. He healed them. And the love of the people toward him was a constant, ongoing, never-ending threat to the power base of the corrupted officials that had found themselves in power. And there is a parallel that we can draw even today. President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, and he has been since day one helping us to fight against the power of the darkness that is in high places. And it is the power of the darkness that has found its way into those high places that continue with these fake trials, these phony charges, and this trumped up narrative of him being a bad nasty. When nothing can be farther from the truth. Most folks don't know, or they can't remember, or they choose by process of selective forgetting that a squatter was found on the Trump property. I believe it was in New York. This was a special needs gal. She happened to be black. And the reason it's significant to this story is because they have tried to say that he's racist. And he's tried to say that he hates handicapped people. And this little gal was homeless and handicapped and squatted her way into a hotel room. And when she was found, she was not evicted by President Donald J. Trump, then Mr. Donald J. Trump. This was some decades ago. This was not just yesterday. This wasn't just as he became president. This wasn't just during the years of being an apprentice, and I never saw an episode of. But he saw to it that she got her three hots and a cot and visits from staff and things to do to keep her busy and medical care and whatever she needed. And I don't believe she's ever paid a bill. And as far as I know, she might still be there. I don't know that part of it. Some people may not know. They may not have heard, and they may have chosen to forget. That when Donald J. Trump was stranded on the side of the road, some people gave him a hand, turned for their helping him. He paid off their mortgage, no strings attached. The narrative that's on the world stage about Donald J. Trump kind of accurate. The narrative that's being told by mainstream media has nothing to do with the gentleman Donald J. Trump that we know as President Donald J. Trump. Did words come out of his mouth? You should hear the words that come out of my mouth. I wonder what words have come out of your mouth. Jesus had a lesson for that too. If we're going to talk about all things becoming new, and if we raise our hand as card-holding members of the body of Christ, should we not act like it? And right now, our sister Judah is under an extreme amount of duress. Death is coming for her. Hamas, which translates into death, Hamas is threatening your sister, Christians. And I want to know where the pulpits are. during this time of duress of our sister Judah, during this time when they don't feel safe to walk on the campuses because the campuses are now becoming occupied with those who would like to do our sister Judah a lot of harm, and they claim victimhood while they're engaging in assault. It sounds very much like what was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. In fact, that's where we're going to pick that part up, and I'm going to type it in here so that I don't forget. So I don't forget to come back to this, because I think it's appropriate before we go forward. Sodom and Gomorrah. What was going on there was everything that was good was illegal, and everything that was bad, this is a whole broad brush, everything that in the law that was bad was considered legal. You could strike a person and charge them for the cure that you just enacted, even though in reality you assaulted them. And we're going to talk about that on the other side of the break, and I'm going to ask, where are the pulpits? Where are the pulpits in this? Where's Ephraim? Where are the Christians? Can't see you. All we see is Hamas threatening our sister Judah. Where are the pulpits? This is the season of Passover, and there's a great insult being enacted against your sister Judah. Evangelicals, Christians, Protestants, Catholics, and otherwise denominational. There hasn't been any due process. They're just screaming at them, poking them in the eye, creating an extremely hostile environment for them to exist on campus, saying that they're liberating portions of campus. Hamas has liberated portions of the Ivy League campuses, not just one, several, getting ready to be all of them. It is Passover night. And, you know, I'm always saying that you can party in Torah too, and I do believe you can party in Torah too. And this should be a time of celebration of the Passover, anticipation, looking for the prophet, looking for the Messiah. The Seder Supper is this evening. There's a great deal of attention and intention going toward the Passover this evening. We'll spend a great deal on it this evening as well. But I like some of the music. Some of the music they got is killer music now, I want to tell you. We've got the Lion King Passover. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that, but I like this kind of music. I like it. It jams and it's fun. And I think this is 613. I'm not real sure the name of this particular group. But we're going to go ahead and go to a break here. It's about 4.5 minute song, so we do have that much time to give to it. We're going to take it easy on this broadcast this evening, ease our way into a 2-hour broadcast on a Monday evening. I'm glad that you're able to join us, whether it's live or podcast. Pod people, we love you too. Those listening remotely don't know who you are. I know that you are, and I want to thank you for being here. Let's take a minute out and remember the roots of Passover, right? You like how I did that? Right? The wild branches don't boast against the roots. So let's take a look at the roots of Passover. We're going to listen to a little song here, Lion King Passover. I am your host, Leander Grace Wolf, talking about Nisan 14. Here we are. Will not protect you. Your silence won't help at all in these days. We are charged by things that are decent to stand up for what's right. And I'm going to ask the question again, where are the pulpits? Where's Judah's sister? I just thought I'd ask that again. And I will probably ask that again. Now, here it is in the book of Joshua, and I gave you the wrong verse to start it. It's a good verse, but I wanted to go through. Now, actually, yeah, let's go ahead and do that. Yeah. I'm trying to find it here. I think I want to start off in very. There was a gentleman, Eliezer. Now, Eliezer was the servant of Abraham. And remember, Lot is the nephew of Abraham, Sarah's wife. Eliezer is the servant, and Lot is the nephew. And that Lot, the nephew, lives in Sodom and Gomorrah area. So it says, and Eliezer went to Sodom, and he met a man of Sodom fighting with a stranger. And the man of Sodom stripped the poor man of all of his clothes and went away. And this poor man cried to Eliezer and supplicated his favor on account of what a man of Sodom had done to him. And he said to him, why dost thou act thus to the poor who came to thy land? So Eliezer went to him and he says, give me a minute. And the man of Sodom answered Eliezer, saying, is this man thy brother? Or have the people of Sodom made thee a judge this day that thou speakest about this man? And Eliezer strove with the man of Sodom on account of the poor man. And when Eliezer approached to recover the poor man's clothes from the man of Sodom, he hastened with a stone and smote Eliezer on the forehead. Let me get a drink. This is going to get good. It's going to a little bit of violence going on. Blood's going to come on out. Hang on a minute. And in verse 17, it says, and the blood flowed copiously from Eliezer's forehead. And when the man saw the blood, he caught hold of Eliezer, saying, right? He's like, oh. Then he grabbed him up, and he says, give me my hire for having rid thee of this bad blood that was in thy forehead, for such is the custom and the law in our land. Now, you would think he'd be lying, huh? You would think that this man who just tore the clothes off of a poor man, and this man Eliezer went to fight back for the possessions of the poor man, and just as he was about to get the better of him, this man of Sodom picked up a stone and smote him on the head, and he's bleeding, and he goes, now you can pay me, right? That's bizarre. How could that even be the law in the land? And Eliezer said to him, verse 18, thou hast wounded me and requirest me to pay thee hire? And Eliezer would not hearken to the words of the man of Sodom. And the man laid hold of Eliezer and brought him to Shakra, the judge of Sodom, for judgment. And the man spoke to the judge, saying, I beseech thee, my lord, thus has this man done. For I smote him with a stone that the blood flowed from his forehead, and he's unwilling to give me my hire. And the judge said to Eliezer, the man speaketh truth to thee, give him his hire, for this is the custom in our land. And Eliezer heard the words of the judge, and he lifted up a stone, and he smote the judge, and the stone struck on his forehead, and the blood flowed copiously from the forehead of the judge. And Eliezer said, if this then is the custom in your land, give thou unto this man what I should have given him, for this has been thy decision. Thou didst decree it. And Eliezer left the man of Sodom and with the judge, and he went away. Now, there's a lot of other things that went on as well. The very daughter of Lot was put to death. Her name was Paltith, and she was put to death for saving the life of a man, because this is something else that they would do. It says, and when the kings of Elam had made war with the kings of Sodom, the kings of Elam captured the property of Sodom, and they took Lot captive with his property, and it was told to Abraham, he went and made war with the kings of Elam, and recovered from their hands all the property of Lot, as well as the property of Sodom. There you go. So that it was this one verse that kind of sums the things that we learned about in Genesis. So this is marries up the timeline here. And at that time, the wife of Lot bare him a daughter, and they called her Paleth, her name Paltith, saying, because God had delivered him and his whole household from the kings of Elam. And Paltith, daughter of Lot, grew up, and one of the men of Sodom took her for a wife. And a poor man came to the city to seek a maintenance and remained in the city some days. And all the people of Sodom caused a proclamation of their custom not to give this man a morsel of bread to eat until he dropped dead upon the earth. And they did so. Now, to make a longer story a little bit short, I couldn't possibly, but I'm going to try, is that she, over a week's time, Lot's daughter, was sneaking bread and water to this man, and he didn't die. And so they set up a watch to catch who it was that was feeding this man. And when they caught her, they bound her
and set her afire. That's what they did. And the people of Sodom and Gomorrah, verse 35, assembled and kindled a fire in the street of the city, and they took the woman and cast her into the fire, and she was burned to ashes. And in the city of Admah there was a woman to whom they did the like. There's another account and another account and another account of the absolute viciousness of the law that was meant to oppress in the ordinance of its being written. And then the last straw, remember that God sent his angels to go and zap Sodom and Gomorrah to toast. But first he sent his angels to get them out. Remember, because Abraham and the Lord were having a conversation. He goes, I'm going to go zap these people to toast. He goes, well, wait a minute, what if there's some good people there? And he's thinking about his nephew and family, right? He's like, no, if there's that many. And then he goes down and back down, and he's like, well, what if there's five? He goes, no, if there's five in the city, I won't destroy it. If there's five righteous in the city, I won't destroy it. He goes, whew, good, because that's how much family I got there, right? So he sends his angels to get Lot and his family out of there so he could zap Sodom and Gomorrah to toast, because what had happened was the young woman went into the house and fetched the man bread and water to eat, and this affair became known to the people of Admah, so that's another city in the area. And they assembled and brought the young woman before the judges, that they should judge her for this act. And the judge said, the judgment of death must pass upon this woman because she transgressed our law by saving a life. And this, therefore, is the decision concerning her. And the people of those cities, plural, assembled and brought out the young woman and anointed her with honey from head to toe, as the judge had decreed. And they placed her before a swarm of bees, which were then in their hives, and the bees flew upon her and stung her, that her whole body was swelled. And the young woman cried out on account of the bees, but no one took notice of her or pitied her or her cry, and her cries ascended to heaven. And the Lord was provoked at this and at all the works of the cities of Sodom. For they had abundance of food and had tranquility amongst them, and still would not sustain the poor and the needy. And in those days their evil doings and sins became great before the Lord. And the Lord sent for two of the angels that had come to Abraham's house to destroy Sodom and its cities. And then we have the rest of the story in Genesis, and there's also more to the story of this as well. But I wanted to bring that in to draw the parallel of the lawlessness of that nation. They weren't really lawless, but their law was wicked. The law was wicked. They allowed wickedness, and they codified it under law. They allowed wickedness, and they codified it under law. And what I see happening on today's campuses here in America of the Ivy League schools is we got some poison ivy there. And the campus staff have not called for the police to intervene, even though death is coming for our sister Judah, taunting her, screaming at her, insulting her, making sure that the presence of death, the presence of Hamas is known. Let me get a drink. And yet the faculty and the administration and the staff and everybody that can put a stop to it has chosen not to put a stop to it and have allowed encampments. They're allowing the creation of little Gaza strips. Oh, she said it. Dang right, I said it. They are creating micro Gaza strips. Understand that Hamas does not care about Palestine. Hamas does not care about Palestinians. Hamas cares about killing. Whether it has to kill Palestinians to kill Jews, or whether it can just point and shoot at Jews. That's what Hamas is doing. Hamas isn't zeroed in just on Jews either. Hamas will cause chaos and death wherever it's told to. And yeah, it goes back to Iran. since the Shah, since our CIA replaced the Shah of Iran with a puppet legislation run by radical Islamists. And if they weren't radical when they got there, they were sure radicalized by the time, but in very short order. And Persia went from a beautiful, gorgeous, well-educated city of peace to a direct oppression of women and a brand new teaching. And now they're in the middle of being run by the terror regime. And they were almost out of it. And then what happened? Then they started funding terror. Who? The Biden administration. Sure enough. So with all of those things going on, knowing that this is pure evil that is being allowed to play out on the campuses of the Ivy League schools, the poison Ivy schools, maybe we should have the pulpit stand up. Maybe those who call themselves Christians and say they value our Judeo-Christian values, perhaps while our sister Judah is observing Passover as given by Moses, perhaps we as Christians observe guard duty. Are we mature enough and self-disciplined enough to watch over our sister Judah? Are we mature enough to set aside the biases that we've been taught to stand beside our sister Judah? What if two Christians walked one on either side of every Jew that was walking on campus? I don't like that word, but I'm using it because it's used. What if we surrounded our sister and showed presence and familial support? Is that not what we were directed to do? Remember, the first followers of Yeshua were not from Samaria. They didn't even want him to go to Samaria. He's like, no, I got to go through Samaria. He goes, why do you want to go to Samaria? Well, he had to go to Samaria. He had to put his foot down, make a claim. That's what happened. And here we are, and our sister Judah is under threat. Last time we let her down. What are we going to do this time, Christians, evangelicals, denominationals, and Catholics? Do we have the backbone to do that? Publicly? Who showed up for Yeshua during the trial? No one. On behalf of Yeshua in his trial. No one. No one showed up. And it was prophesied, they'll smite the shepherd and the flock will be scattered. And like, no, we're not going anywhere. Sure enough. Because they were scary. They brought a whole battalion of stuff to bring Jesus in. Because they didn't, you know, they had already done like they did today, had a false narrative through the fake news. Oh, I just thought I'd poke. A false narrative through the fake news that they were probably armed and dangerous. He tried to pull a little Koresh going on there. No need. He gave up willingly. He knew what was coming. He just finished praying all night to the point where his sweat, as it were drops of blood. And thrown in jail and tried all day and pushed back and forth and beaten and slapped and whipped and mocked and ridiculed and all of those things that we know. And no one showed up for him. Someone was assigned the privilege of carrying his cross. And the disciples, and then they watched from afar. So, Northern Kingdom, evangelicals, Protestants, Christians, denominationals, Catholic, we show up. How about we not be a no-show? How about we show up in solidarity of our sister Judah? We can do this. We can choose to do these things. I would not necessarily say that this is a salvific issue, but I'll say that we need to get it right, Northern Kingdom, and God's still watching. I just thought that I would share. We need to get this right, Northern Kingdom. Already won. We must show up. And I'm not going to say whatever that looks like to you. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say we need to make a physical presence known so that death understands that they don't get to come and taunt our sister Judah. The last days. Perhaps that second death? We're going to continue to put these prophetic pieces together throughout the week, throughout the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And you say, Leanna Grace, do you observe the feast? Do I eat the matzah? Well, I have some matzah, but it's difficult for me, so I eat the crackers and pray that God accepts that because there is an issue with the mechanics of chewing the matzah. Not going to happen, so crackers and stuff. And if I need to correct that, I'm sure that the Lord will teach me and quickly. And I'll be listening just in case. Sure will. So let's get back to the calendar, get back to my little layout here. So where we're at is now, as the night comes down, and as the sun goes down and the night is spread out, on this night in the land of Egypt, the angel of death moves. Now, we watch the Ten Commandments and Charlton Heston and all that stuff at Easter time, but this is when it applies. This is what's going on. Jesus is in the tomb. He's being laid in the tomb before sundown. And then he'll spend 3 days in the tomb. And I find it interesting to note that on this night in Egypt, the children of Israel were making sure that the lamb's blood was on the doorposts and over the lintels, and that they were eating as according to the scriptures, as Moses told them how to prepare the carcass, the lamb, and they were eating it ready to go out the door. They were to eat it with their clothes on and their sashes tied and their feet shod and their staff in their hand. And this night, our sister Judah is observing the Seder Supper. And the Seder Supper is what they're observing as they await Messiah. And you say, well, Leanna Grace, isn't Jesus Messiah? Absolutely, Yeshua HaMashiach Nagin, our Lord and Savior, who we call Jesus Christ. But Judah's looking for something else. Judah's looking for something too. Judah's looking for Elijah to precede Messiah. And there's something about that. And they know it. And pretty soon the Northern Kingdom will know it. Without Yeshua, none of this is possible. Without his death on the cross, without him overcoming death in the grave, the pardon would not be available to complete the scriptures. We'll leave that for another broadcast on another day. But tonight, our sister Judah is observing Seder. And they have a little plate that they have. It's got eggs on it and radish, horseradish, and bitter herbs. And there's a whole story that goes with the Seder plate. And it tells the story of Egypt, and it tells the story of the of all of the, their history. And the hidden matzah, as it were, right? And what they're waiting for, the completion of. I am your host, Leander Grace. We're going to go ahead and go into a break here. One more song about Passover. Why? Because they're fun. And this one's jamming. And this one's slamming. It's jamming. It's Uptown Passover, again, by the group 613. And we'll be back on the other side. I hope you guys are having fun, because I'm having fun playing this and going through the history and putting the things together and showing the picture across time. And not every color that needs to be in it is included. There's some that we already know about. We don't have to go over. It'd be a six-hour broadcast if we did. But we are going to be observing Passover this evening. And for those of you of the Northern Kingdom, contemplate what that means for us as children of Israel in the land of Egypt coming out, and what that means for our sister Judah to this day, and what that means for those of us of the Northern Kingdom. It all points to the same thing. It all points to Messiah. I am your host, Leander Grace, Uptown Passover. It's jamming. We'll be back.
Do. Do, 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 do. Do, 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 do. Egyptian cities. We worked hard, but prayed to God, and he freed us all, so get ready.
Let my people go. He said, let my people go. Let my people go. Moses said, let my people go. Let my people go. He said, let my people go. Let my people go. He sent blood and frogs and lice all over their bodies. Wild animals all angry. Livestock disease, now that's nasty. Boil, hell, fire, and locusts. Plague of the firstborn and darkness.
Silence will not chew. We've got to talk about it, talk about it loud. And what we're talking about tonight is Nisan 14. It is sundown of Passover, and that means tonight is Passover. And there you have it. So Jesus is laid in the tomb before sundown. And if we go back into the dates to make the days marry up so that we understand that Sunday, he rose on the first day of the week. And what that means was Nisan 18 happened to come on the first day of the week during the time that Jesus was crucified, and that it was on a Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday, and Sabbath, the three Sabbath days running consecutively during that time frame. And then between the Sabbaths is when Mary brought the spices, and that was on the first day of the week. Between which Sabbaths? Well, just as the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is a day of assembly and a rest day, so is the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So the 8 days that they're eating the matzah is to include with the Passover and into the evening. And then the Hebrew calendar changes days at sundown. And so it becomes a little bit different for the Western mind to grab from time to time if you're not used to thinking in that way. So there you have that. And then we'll bring it forward through the week with the days in the tomb and the Red Sea and with specific teachings that, you know, whichever the Father gives me to talk about on that particular day. So there you have that. That's what we're talking about. And there's all kinds of good Northern Kingdom Christian Rise Again stuff that we'll be listening to when we get there. But for now, and for the next 3 nights, Jesus is in the tomb. Yeshua is in the tomb, according to the scripture. And then once the liberty occurs in the morning of the Passover, what happened? They all got their stuff, and the Egyptians were practically paying them to leave, because if they didn't, God would keep beating them up, keep beating the Egyptians up in the name of the Hebrews, in the name of the children of Israel. Can I get an amen? Not much has changed, and those who are opposed to Israel and those who are opposed will find out. And this isn't a threat. This is just a reiteration of the way history has taught us to look at the things when it comes to his kids. He is jealous of his kids. He will protect his kids, Adonai will. And as long as we're staying within his will, doing what we're supposed to do, the way we're supposed to be doing it,
then we've got his protection. He'll know where we're at when he zaps his zaps. When he has to zap to toast, he knows that he's got his kids over here. If they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, the way they're supposed to be doing it, then he knows that his kids are over here. And so when he moves over here, his folks are safe. And we see this throughout the scriptures, the great lengths to which the Father goes to move his children into place, to do those things that he needs his children to do to complete his will. Yeah, it's beautiful. It's absolutely gorgeous. The whole picture and the harmony of it comes together. And it does. So the challenge that I have, again, bringing it up one more time, is where are the pulpits? Should the pulpits not show up? Are we not told that the battle's won, but we've got to show up? And I think this would be a wonderful time for the Northern Kingdom to get it right and to show up in solidarity for these students on campus that are being harassed, harangued, abused, accosted, and otherwise insulted and humiliated because of their lineage. And we've got laws against that, don't we? And yet here they are, under the color of protest, demonstrating an extreme amount of aggression, of presence. Remember, presence is protection. When you're a police officer, the more police you got on the street, the less crime that you'll have, because presence is prevention. When a teacher is present in the classroom and moves about the cabin throughout the students, that's presence. And it's a better behavior management model. When you've got a bunch of Hamas worshipers, death worshipers, wearing that chain link scarf, there's an official term. I'm not going to give them the respect of using it because they're not respectful to the campus. They're not respectful to America. They're not respectful to the flag. They're not respectful to my sister Judah. And frankly, they're not respectful to any living thing. They have one goal, and that is to disrupt and to otherwise dismay our sister Judah and to dare the pulpits from showing up. Are the pulpits afraid of a little Hamas? While our sister Judah has their two holy days, should we show up? Judah's observing Passover. What if the frogs entered the camp? Just asking. Just for giggles. I'm asking for giggles. I'm not directing or suggesting or otherwise indicating that that should be carried out. But it is an interesting picture to contemplate, to surround Hamas with a plague of frogs, just like God did with Egypt, to stand in between his children and those who would bring death. I think the analogy and the parallel are stunning and striking and all served up on a silver platter for us to bring to you this evening, that we is inclusive, of course. Now, I've been looking at this particular occupation going on. Let me get a drink and clear my throat, because it's time to get a drink and clear my throat. And so that was a drink, and let me clear my throat. I read somewhere that 3 seconds of airspace is about all there is before people start listening and thinking there might be a problem. So I want to be sure I do things quickly. And there you have that. Now, I want to take a look at this occupation that's going on now. Remember back in 2011-ish, they had Occupy Wall Street, and the occupation was the occupation of the 99% against the 1% upper crust. And what they had done is draw battle lines, and some of us didn't know which side to stand on. So we kind of stood in the middle looking either way and just preaching what we had to be preached anyway. And I was one of those who got to be. That's when I became intimately educated, intimately knowledgeable. I became very, very brushed up on President John F. Kennedy. Not that I didn't know before or any of that, but that was when we really focused in, because that's when it was time for us to really focus in. And although Soros and all the funding from George Soros came in and all of that dark money came in to fund that Occupy Wall Street, it tested the system. It was testing like a velociraptor. What's going to happen when we do this? Now, remember, Obama was in charge then, too. Oh, she said it. Obama was in charge then, too. And this was all designed to create havoc. It was designed to create trauma, and it was designed to see what we, the people, would do. And a lot of things occurred during that time that they were not expecting. A lot of things occurred was some of the occupations were in their face, and it was no longer occupied just Wall Street, but a lot of things were getting occupied, and a lot of people were getting educated. And it was because during that time, a lot of people were getting educated and a lot of people were speaking out, that when it came time to elect Donald J. Trump, there was no hesitation from the people. And because regardless of what the numbers that came in, it was clear that there was no hesitation from the people, the anti-Trump machine got into full gear. There's a parallel here. Against him. This was back in 2016 and 2017. And when he didn't totally blow the debate, Ryan and Pence were going to get together and kill him. And they were very clear on that and very close on it. And they even had the website started to go up. They had like a napkin to work with, a napkin of information to work with. There's a bunch of stuff that goes into that. And since they weren't going to be able to pull it off, they decided to go with bimbos instead. Here we are. The bimbo parade. All it has to do is look like it. It doesn't have to be true. It just has to look true, according to the propaganda machine. None of the charges that were levied against Jesus were true. It just had to sound true. It just had to look. Pilate was like, I'm washing my hands of this. Boom. Who's going to show up for Judah? Because they're no longer shouting against the 99%, which is something everybody could kind of live with. Now they have gone with what's the percentage of Jewish population in this nation? That's who they're targeting. And I want to tell you, they're not just targeting us here in the United States. I fully expect us to hear reports abroad of poison ivy being occupied, or the Ivy League being occupied by poison ivy. And what I also understand is that these college students, these Ivy League, poisoned Ivy League students, are allowing those who are not in the Ivy League, those who are not on campus, access to campus. So it's not just students anymore. And those who are students have been professionally trained, and this is professionally trained communism, and they're using our sister Judah as an excuse, as a target as well, not to minimize. But it started out as, you know, Occupy Wall Street, we the 99%, and now they're occupying campuses, private property, they're occupying campuses, and it's Jew hatred for Hamas. It's diabolically, but it's still diabolical to be on the campus and have the cover of social justice on a college campus and weak-willed staff and faculty that won't stand up and call right, right, and wrong, wrong. So we had the practice of Occupy Wall Street. And we had the practice of Charlottesville, almost call it Clarksville. I don't know where I was thinking, but, you know, it was a ville or Charleston, or I don't know where I had it in the wrong place. The right frame of mind, but the wrong location. That was practice. Seattle, Summer of Love, Occupy Seattle, and they're trained, and they're hardened after seasons of this stuff. Black Lives Matter, that was practice. January 6th was an op, not from MAGA. And now we have this operation. Operation Hamas is what I'm going to call it, from the left, where they willingly allow, invite, and support Hamas to create their own little Gaza strips on college campuses to torment and terrorize Americans who are our sister Judah. They're Americans first, they're also our sister Judah, but they're being targeted because they're our sister Judah. What are we going to do, pulpits? I pray that we show up. We've got Methodists, we've got Pentecostals, we've got every kind, we've got 40,000 different denominations that could stand to answer this call, and Catholics. And I do continuously say them separately because they're different, and not different as far as people, but different in the teaching and different in the way they fit together in the story, not the people, but the church. Everything was subject to be used, including the church and the churches. And now we see the target has not changed. They want to remove our sister Judah because our sister Judah is the root. You understand this? They want to rip our belief system out by the root, which is Judah. They want to annihilate the Hebrew language so that we can no longer understand the nuances and the tiny little message sequences that are given by Holy Spirit through the Hebrew language. They want to blow up the holy site so we can no longer decipher our past or prove it. And then pretty soon everything that is true becomes a mythos, and everything that is a mythos is pretended to be true. Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, Tooth Fairy. And we want to protect those mythoses because there's fun in their practices, but first we have to get the truth down. Then we can play pretend. But first, we need to get the truth down. Now we have passed the 8 o'clock mark. We're into 8:20. We do have a caller on the line. I want you to know I see you there. I want to go ahead and continue with this, close this up, open up another bag of tricks that we can talk about. And I'll be taking your call here directly. We have a lot of things to talk about. If we don't have callers, we've got a lot of things we can talk about tomorrow. If we do have callers, and so the phone lines are open, and let me tell you a little bit about now we're changing into empathic channel. And for those of you who want to talk about Nisan 14, the things we just talked about now, feel free to do so. But those of you who want to call in and be a part of what's usually broadcasting at this 8 o'clock hour from 8 to 9 o'clock is empathic channel, I invite you to do so. So let me go ahead and give you that call-in number before we move too far along, and that is area code 563. The number is 999-3647. Again, that's 563-999-3647. I am your host, Leanna Grace. We're going to be opening up the phone lines and taking callers here. We do have a few, at least one, in the queue to get to. So for those of you joining us, I want to welcome you here and give you a little bit of information about the readings before we get about the calls, before we get too far into it. If you're calling for a reading from the Guardians, understand it's Holy Spirit and those that come from Yahweh Elohim. That's all we have connection to here on Empathic Channel. We are part of Holistic Truth Radio, part of an Atstream network. We'll watch for signposts during these calls and we'll help you connect the dots and see if we can find your path amid some of your own distractions, because we do. Sometimes we create distractions for the very purpose of solving them or having something to look past so that we can see what it is that's in front of us. You know, sometimes we create our own crises so we have a catalyst, whether we do it consciously or subconsciously, so we have a catalyst to catapult us, let me get a drink, to the next level of whatever that's going to be looking like. So we do that. We want to enhance our own learning experiences. Sometimes we set up some little roadblocks to figure out. In some cases, we're playing with our own little mental blocks, and that can be fun for a little while. But as we learn how to really live in real life as one in our total greatness, then we will be challenged in an ongoing manner to constantly improve ourselves and see those portions of whatever, and we trim a little bit off there and perhaps do away with some things that no longer serve us. We get really long-winded on Holistic Truth, but here on Empathic Channel, it's just compassionate wisdom and readings, offering salt with the gift. Hopefully there is wisdom. You'll need to decide that. But there is a spirit in man, and God brings the understanding. We do respect all boundaries and dignity of person and spirit. That means we don't poke where we don't need to. I don't see stuff I don't need to. And we're not here to bust your chops. We'll take all the calls here in the studio, folks, and trust my soul guardian team to take care of the filters and the translations and all that. That's sort of how it works. That's why you can say with your words and I can hear what you mean, and sometimes we can get in the middle of the translation and do all that. It's Empathic Channel, Holy Spirit connected, and with that, let's go ahead and go to the phone lines, and we do have area code 631. So area code 631, I'm going to go ahead and bring your microphone live and say, welcome to the program. Can I get your first name, where you're calling from?
Suzanne, Florida.
Suzanne from Florida, welcome. What can we do for you this evening?
I just wanted to know if you were doing readings, but what do you see with work or moving or love life, anything?
Mm-hmm.
Or all three?
Okay, well, pick one to start with, and usually what they do, since they're all connected anyway, usually if you pick one, then we can start from there and branch on out. Now that I know you need all three, let's see what we can do. So,
I moved from Long Island to Florida, but it just because my family moved here, like to different states, and I was alone there. Not the best decision, but I'm here. Do you see me
mm-hmm.
staying here till my lease is
yes.
up in November? New York?
Yeah, I see.
I have to stay.
Yeah.
I have to stay
actually,
here
I don't,
till November.
Yeah, I see you staying
I'd like
longer.
To
and
move
it,
back. Either I'd like to move back to Long Island or move to North Carolina if my son goes there. I really don't like
mm-hmm.
Florida.
I know, but I don't see you moving. You're asking, I'm telling you, I can't tell you what I don't see, but I'll tell you what I do see. I do see you staying in Florida past November at least one season, at least 3 months. At least 3 months. And it won't be because you have to. It'll be because you want to. Something will occur between now and November that will have you seeing things a little differently, and you'll want to stay a little longer. That doesn't mean you'll never get back to New York or that you'll never get to the Carolina. Okay, but it does mean that it won't be as quick as November. There'll be an additional season, which usually means 3 to 4 months when the guardians are saying it that way. And it'll be something, you know, there'll be a good thing that occurs. You'll be like, well, this isn't so bad. I mean, it's not chocolate ice cream. It's vanilla. It's still ice cream. You know what I mean? It's like it's not going to be your dream thing. But
well,
it'll
I
be
really
enough to keep you there. Say,
well, I really can't stay because I have to do another year lease. You see what I'm saying? In November, I have to
mm-hmm.
do another whole year. Yeah.
Okay. So
I don't, I'm not, I don't own a home. So, yeah.
Susan, this is April. And a lot of things can happen between April and November. Staying in Florida doesn't necessarily mean staying in that same physical location, and it doesn't necessarily mean renewing a lease. Okay, so they're very specific for me to point this out, that you will more than likely be staying in Florida at least a season past November, and it will be by your choice. Now, I know that you haven't gotten out as much as you want to. Here's where the reading comes. I know you haven't gotten out as much as you wanted to. You wanted to at first, but you held back. Now, if you have a consistent place for midday area gathering, not the evening time yet, but some midday luncheon.
I really don't. I have to find a full-time job. I'll be out in the street. I'm not retired.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the two can go hand in hand. So what you're really good at telling people what to do. You're good at telling people what to do. Are there supervising positions available, or a position? Because you'd work good in a position of authority, right? But
no,
you work.
Not really. I wouldn't. I don't have any experience. In Florida, mm-hmm. pays like $12 to $15 an hour. That's the big problem here.
Mm-hmm.
No, I was a teacher aide, worked with kids my whole life. I now don't have any supervisor. Mm-hmm. I don't want to work at 20 hours
okay.
a day.
Okay, so everything that you just described is a supervisory position, and it involves telling people what to do, even though it's
not really
children.
The teachers tell me what to do.
So what I was going to suggest is, since you do know how to teach and you do know how to help, are there any non-public school positions available for you to take a look at? And not necessarily.
I don't know. It's very hard where I live to get a job.
Mm-hmm.
I've just been out
right.
here since August. Yeah, it's not mm-hmm. acclimated to getting a job out here. I just moved out here, like I said, because my mother moved out here. Everybody moves to different states. That's the only reason I moved here. I picked up with everything in my own back of my car. Stupid idea,
mm-hmm.
but I'm here.
Okay. Well, I'm explaining to you what I'm being told by the guardians. And it's either going to be very, very helpful or it's not going to be very, very helpful. What they're saying is, suggesting to you, is that since you do have supervisory experience in that you were a teacher's aide, there's a certain level of supervision that you were exercising over others. And because you were able to teach and be supervised and supervised at the same place, those are skills. You may only be seeing them in the setting of a public school classroom, but those are skills that can transfer into the work world in a lot of other different capacities. Now, I don't know if you speak another language, but there's teaching English don't know. Well, I'm giving you suggestions rather than giving me a no, give me a listen. So you can teach translation things. There's a lot of things that you're able to teach. You have the ability, but you're observant and you get to tell people what to do. And with those skills, those two things, you do them easily, sometimes brassly, sometimes gently, but you do those things easily. And there are jobs that need people like you that can be supervised and supervised at the same time and can teach others, relaying information to others. Teaching is the same thing as supervising and relaying information to others, teaching them how you want a job. Are there any positions available? You might want to take a look at training others in a skill, whether it's
not,
a language or whether
really.
That's
Florida,
something that they're suggesting. It might be difficult, but if you don't give it a go, then you won't know. And so what they're going
to
suggest is...
I don't want to train him to do what?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
because
Susan,
you're
making it extremely difficult for us to help you. You're making
but
it very difficult for us to help you because the information that we're giving you is very good information. And you keep saying, no, I can't do that, I can't do that. And they wouldn't give you this information if it wasn't possible for you to do this. I've been doing this job for a very long time. This particular position, this particular skill I've been exercising for a very long time. It's very rare that they're off the mark. So I'm going to ask you to take a few minutes back during the day this evening, breathe a little bit, take another look at your future, and even if it's not here right now, are there positions available that will accommodate your ability to supervise and teach while being supervised? With those three things, those bullet items, going through simply the classifieds, I think you'll find some, because you're more knowledgeable. You have a lot of global knowledge about a lot of things. I think you'll find
really
positions
don't.
Available.
I don't. I'm a teacher aide.
Okay, then.
I don't.
Okay.
I mean, if you put in
well, that's the information.
Yeah.
That's the information that I've got for you. And it'll either be very helpful or it won't. And with that, I am going to wish you a good night, and then I'm going to suggest as well that you listen to the podcast again when we're done. We'll be done at 9 o'clock, and then it'll process through. And find this place just at about 90 minutes in where your reading is so that you can hear again the information, because something might hit then. But we've given you all that we can give you. The rest is up to you. Okie doke?
Thank you.
You betcha. All right. You have a good evening, dear. And sometimes that's the way it is. We don't always hear what's being given because we have our mind set in an old thinking, and I get there too. We've all get there, and we all recognize and we all know what we need to do, and it's simply breathe and see that there are options on the table, and there are steps that can be taken, and there are things that can be done always. And this, it's always, even if they're little teeny tiny steps to make something a little bit better, then we have at least those little teeny tiny steps to make ourselves a little bit better, a little bit stronger. With that, I'm going to go ahead and bring a song to the airwaves that came to my attention today. Evidently, and this is just my ignorance of pop culture and mainstream information, but there is a singing artist by the name of Mandisa, a Christian singing artist, and evidently she passed away. And I hadn't heard of her before. I apologize, but again, I haven't been in the mainstream for quite some time. And so this little blessing of a song was brought to my attention, mentioned, and then I looked up the person's name, and this is the song that I found. So I thought that I'd bring it to the airwaves today. And this goes out to my listeners and also to my sister Judah. You know, it sucks right now with all of the heat that's coming at you, and it just started because you defended yourself. Go figure. I am your host, Leander Grace. We're going to listen to Mandisa. The song is Stronger, and I haven't listened to it all, I haven't listened to it all from beginning to end, but I heard enough of the middle that I know I wanted to bring it to you this evening. So this is Mandisa. Rest in peace, sister. And the name of the tune is Stronger. I am your host, Leander Grace. This is Empathic Channel until 9 p.m., and we will be back.
Hey, heard you were up all night, thinking about how your world ain't right, and you wonder if things will ever get better. All you want is just a little good news instead of sentiment.
lies, we seek truth. Amid truth, we awaken. It's Leander Grace Out Loud, because your silence will not protect you. Oh no, thank you ladies, your silence will not protect you. That was an amazing song, and I just thought I'd share it with you this evening. It came to my, I just fell in love with it. I was like, oh, that's the song I needed for this evening too. So I thought I'd bring it and bless you, right? So let's continue on. You know, it's Earth Day today, and we may talk more about that. But we've only got like 25 minutes, so we might come back to that. I mean, Earth Day was established in 1970, and it's a really good thought. But on that day, we started putting the Earth's needs, those of the property that the Father entrusted us to husband, ahead of our needs. And, you know, if we don't take care of us, then we're not going to be around to take care of the Earth. And they've got a lot of fake information going on about that, and we're going to take care of that on another podcast. So I'm just, you know, I'm tired of the NGOs doing the things, and here goes, let's talk about shedding stress. And you can feel free to call in and shed some stress here too, but shedding stress and managing the anger, not avoiding it, not pretending it's not there, not stuffing it. Of course, sometimes you have to suppress the reaction. You know, it's not always, it doesn't always seem appropriate to allow others to see that you're angry. I say, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Of course, there is a time and a place to hold, right? I love that commercial, hold. There's a time and a place to hold your actions until a more appropriate time to not vent but express the anger. But let's first of all talk about shedding stress. What is that? You know, what is shedding stress, and how do you do that? One of the first things to remember when we make a decision that we're overstressed and we need to shed stress, and even before we get to being stressed, the first thing to remind ourselves is that God is in control, and if God's in control, then it's going to be okay. And in the end, it's going to be okay. And if it's not okay, it's not the end. You know, and I'm reminded of a Jungian teaching that goes something like this, is that whenever I find some situation outside of me stressful, it's because, well, maybe it's from a different program, but it's because it reminds me of something inside that I find, you know, distasteful or unwanted or undesirable, fill in the blank, and it's a shadow thing. You know, if I'm stressed out, and there's concern and there's attention being paid, but if I'm stressed out because of what's going on campus, and I'm not one of the ones that's on campus, then I'm not trusting God, and I'm taking it too personally. And you say, well, Leander Grace, this is all personal. Absolutely. But we can't live in the stress of what if, and at the forsake of, you know, forsaking what is. And so this is what we know on the world stage. A lot of people are lying, a lot of people are dying, and more are being threatened. How do you shed that stress? If it's not knocking on your door at this very minute, there's a lot of different things that you can do. If you are not in immediate danger and the stress is not upon you and you don't have to answer any questions or solve any problems within the next 30 seconds or 30 minutes, then you have a moment and time to shed stress. My first thing of shedding stress is, well, first, usually it comes out my eyes. All right, so there's a lot of things that come out my eyes, and a lot of people have found out that things make me cry, and it's okay. I'm okay with that. So, and I do want to give this a little bit of this, a little insight into my gift. Now, somebody asked me one time, I was in a conversation, I think it was with another professional, a phone conversation with another professional, and they were asking me, you know, if my stress is, you know, because we all express our stress physically in one way or another, And then just talking about my gift and how it manifests and stuff like that. And I said, well, when my gift is operational and if it's on overdrive and there's a reflexive response, there's times that it can, my body will react as if, let me say that, as if it is in pain. Okay, so I carry it in my gut, and what I'll feel sometimes is a flex in my gut that is so tight that you would think that I was in physical pain, and I'm not. But there's a lot of emotional feeling going on at the core of my being as I'm processing and bringing in and throwing out and doing all that stuff, which is just part of the gift and part of the things that I do. Every once in a while, something tragic will strike my psyche that I was unprepared for, and there will be a reaction. And it is a melding. It's an automatic empathic response, and don't need to go into any more detail other than that. But sometimes it can be very alarming, and sometimes it can be very disconcerting. But there's methods and ways and mechanics of dealing with it. And a lot of times, sometimes what I need to do is just cry for the person or the individual or the situation or whatever, because it's going to happen. And I can stuff it and wait and put it off, or I can just process it. And that's part of, as an empath, processing it and transmuting it. And although it sounds brutal, and I guess it is, but I'm kind of built that way. I'm built for it, to transmute the pain and understand it on the other side of it in a different way. And it's not the most, not always is it the funnest ride. And sometimes it has unexpected results. But I also want to say this about that, empathy and pain, whether it's emotional pain or whether it's physical pain, and this is about shedding the stress. You know, we are empathic automatically. I mean, we just are. We're empathic beings. Now, there are some who have seared consciences, and that's a little bit different. But for instance, if we see somebody crying, for instance, we have an immediate need a lot of times, and this is, I'm just giving out a generic scenario of a broad brush. Many times we feel the need to go to that person and solve their emotional turmoil right now. And we usually say things like, oh, don't cry. Well, it's too late. Flood water's running. Or we say, oh, don't feel that way. But that person feels that way. So understand that emotions are neither good nor bad. They're there. And it's said by one of my old-time teachers, Dr. Father Martin, you're either going to handle them or they will handle you. So we handle our emotions. They were given to us as a gift from God. It's a biochemical, emotional, all of those things. And we can't deny that they're there. They're neither good nor bad. They're there. They are just there. We need to handle them, or they will handle us. And if by denying that we're angry, our anger is going to handle us. It will show its little self at the least expected time. And usually suppressed anger is exercised against somebody smaller than you. Almost always a suppressed anger is taken out on something or someone smaller. So we don't want to suppress it. We want to manage it. So shedding the stress, how do we do? I cry, and some of it's processing. Some of it's emotional processing. There was an interchange between a gal and I the other day, not long ago. Unwittingly, I was exposed to, sometimes just hearing of a trauma path, hearing the trauma can start a visual playlist in the mind, and that playlist can be traumatizing, and then it needs to be processed. And so there's a whole thing that goes on. And somebody asked me, well, does it bother you that that happens, and do you get angry? And it's like, no, I don't get angry. I just get busy processing. It's everyone else around me that isn't comfortable with it. It's everyone else around the person who is upset that is uncomfortable with the upsetness of the person. It is the reminder of the humanity and the fragility that we all share that scares us, so that when we see someone really shedding stress and crying, we immediately want to stop them so we don't cry. We want to make them feel better so that we don't feel bad. So understand, when we're offering comfort to somebody, a lot of times the comfort that we're offering is completely self-serving. We want them to feel better so that we feel better. That's not saying we want to feel better and say, oh, I made that person. That's I'm not talking about an ego trip. I'm talking about empathic relief. When you see somebody in distress, you know, we're taught, well, you help them out. That's the right thing to do. Absolutely. But part of the reason why we're moved to help each other out compassionately is because we're relieving our own discomfort at the same time. There was a time not long ago, well, it was actually more than a couple of years ago, I found myself on a public bus. And, you know, I have a little back injury, and from time to time the pain will get up. And this was one of those days. And riding on a bus is very uncomfortable because I have no inertial adjustment from time to time. And so I get tossed about a bit. Well, back then, that's the way that was. So during one of these bus rides, very rare as they are, there was a bump, and I was airborne, and I came down hard on the seat, and I was in distress. And here's the thing. Nobody knew how to help. Everyone was in distress because they knew that that had injured me, and everyone was in distress because they knew that I was in some residual pain from it. This is in a matter of moments and minutes. But there was nothing that anybody could do to relieve that at that time. And the only thing that there is to relieve any of that, since there was no serious injury, there wasn't enough pain to make anything cry, the only thing you can do is laugh, right? And so that's what ensued. And I began the laughter, and the laughter was infectious, and we all kind of laughed because, you know, my butt talks nearly went up to my ear holes, and that was what an uncomfortable place to be. And so that was shedding stress for those who were experiencing watching my stress. And there's times that I will see somebody in distress, and I want to go to them, and I want to comfort them to make myself feel better because I'm hurting watching them. I'm empathic. We're all empathic to a degree. And then sometimes it's best to stand back and let that person feel what it is they're feeling, and let them cry about what it is that they're crying about as part of a healing mechanism and emotional resolution to a stressful situation that's shedding the stress. And sometimes there's more stress than others, and sometimes there's more shedding of the stress than others, but all of it goes to shedding the stress. And we all have things that stress us differently in degrees of tolerance and so forth. And as far as managing the anger, I find that the key to my anger management lies in shedding the stress. And understanding that when I'm angry about something, okay, that I'm just angry about it, and realize that there's nothing that I can do to right the situation, make it worse, make it better, I'm too far removed from it, whatever. It doesn't do me any good to go to somebody else and talk to them about how angry I am about this thing. Because then all I'm doing is using them as a channel and a mechanism by which to relieve my suffering by laying it on them, and then they're going to have to go tell somebody else, and then the next thing you know, this great big stressful contagion has been laid across a connection of persons. And it branches out, and it's a contagion, and those who are demonstrating on the campuses in the name of Hamas know it. They're counting on what I just told you to be true. mechanism of spreading chaos and stress. And if it hits those who do not manage their stress and shed their stress well, then it will manifest itself in some type of anger behavior, because the beginning of management of your anger is management of your stress. And the very first step of managing the stress is turning it over to God and understanding that we're not going to be able to fix everything overnight. And bad things just happen sometimes, not being passé, but being in acceptance of it. And not to hang on to those things that no longer serve us as stressors, not to hang on to those things just because we have it in the background to keep us angry because we want to stay angry. But really shedding the stress and giving up those things that don't serve us, and false accusation against people's places and things. And that's what Hamas is doing now, is making all the accusations against our sister Judah, against Israel in general, because it hides their hate for our sister Judah specifically. And the ones who slaughtered, plundered, tortured, took hostages was Hamas. The ones that began the chaos was Hamas. It wasn't Palestinians, it wasn't Palestine, and it wasn't Israel, it was Hamas. There's a lot of complications and complexities that go into that and why that invasion was successful, but it was not Palestinians. It was Hamas. It was death. It was the terrorist organization. And it is still a terrorist organization. I don't care whether they went through all of the little things in the Biden administration, which I think Jake Sullivan, I believe, is at the one at the helm last I heard. I'm going to have to get back and double-check the info. But I do believe that Chanel Rion is letting us know that it's Blake Sullivan or Jake Sullivan, that Sullivan guy, that's behind the head of all of this stuff, that seems to be orchestrating the wheel turning going on behind the Biden, because, you know, Biden can't put two sentences together. And this looks exactly like the Obama regime, according by the book. I thought I'd throw that in there too. So managing the anger is, first of all, managing the stress and finding a productive way to express the anger. A productive way. Sometimes screaming. Sometimes just yelling. And sometimes really saying everything that you've got to say without it counting, knowing that the anger has a mind of its own sometimes and will say things that we never would say because we have better judgment. Even if we feel a certain way, we know better than to act a certain way. But anger doesn't know right from wrong. It just wants to be expressed. Yes, I'm personifying an emotion, because Gestalt said we could. I just thought I'd throw that in there. And that. So shedding the stress, sometimes just changing clothes, sometimes just changing the ritual when you go through the door of your home. And sometimes sitting down in a nice stuffy chair and having a good long cry while hugging a pillow is the only medicine that's going to work. And there are other times when a warm washcloth will do the trick too. Love and a warm washcloth can heal a bunch of wounds and stave off a bunch of woes. Slowing down and taking time to feel those things that we feel, and understanding that everyone gets to have that moment. Don't interrupt the moment because it makes you uncomfortable. Because sometimes the tears are the brightest sign of strength that a warrior has to show. I am your host, Leanda Grace. I hope you found value in tonight's broadcast or podcast, Pod People. We love you too. For those listening remotely, don't know who you are, we know that you are. And I'm very, very glad that you spent your evening with me this evening. Going forward, starting in May, we will be going to 3-hour broadcast, just like we did in the beginning. We'll go ahead and continue that and pick that up where we left it off some time ago, and I'm talking about a decade. It looks like an occupation is brewing and we're getting ready to show. But at least through the time of the counting of the Omer, we'll be going on the 3 hours, so it beginning in May and continuing on until the Father says something different. Because that's who's running it. That, you know, I'm just following instructions. And sometimes I do a good job and sometimes I don't do a good job. But we do the job nonetheless. So I want to thank you to the caller, even though it was a little bit of a rough call for you, and the listeners alike for being a part of the mystery today. Live listeners, local and remote pod people, we love you too. And a big thank you to our tree people in the chat room. We had one in and out for a little bit. You folks keep the energy going. Looking forward to having a lot more traffic and a lot more chatter in the chat room as we go forward and talk about a variety of topics over a span of time. Awesome support and wonderful sharing from you guys. I thank you for your prayers, and I thank you for all of the uplifting and the hugs and the kisses and the little bitty stuff that you do for me that nobody else gets to see but me. I want to thank you for it. You can send me an email if you'd like to. You can send me an email at leandragrace@protonmail.com. I guess I'll have to start checking my email again. I'm not real good at that. I stay focused on in front, and I'm not always good at the side to side, and that's just from good training. But you can send me an email, see if there's any topics that you do want to hear about more of here, and we'll go into holistic truth on a nightly basis. We'd love to promote more light workers as well. You light workers, you light weavers, and you warriors. You're not asking for nothing, but feel free to come on in and plug your product if you'd like to. If it's of spirit and if it respects the Lord and if it helps to heal humanity, we'll promote you up real good. And if it's America first and a MAGA warrior, we're all about that as well. It's about helping each other get the word out, the truth, the holistic truth, so we can work together and get it out there. This is the Empathic Channel. I am your host, Leanna Grace, and we've been broadcasting live from the high mountain desert. I'm reminding you too, as always, to watch for the signposts, to connect the dots, to find your path, to live in love, and do something good, because we'll learn to forgive. Until next time. Good night.